What's up, Atlanta? It's a Tuesday with Turtle. We got the full four with you tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When I see Damian Day-Day Lewis tomorrow, executive producer of Dukes and Bell, I am going to stand him nose to nose tomorrow and go, "Kind sir, I have two words for you and that vagabond crew that you lead, Dukes and Bell. Clock integrity." For whatever reason, these Hooters remotes, Dukes and Bell, feel the need. Don't tread on me, Oren Romaine. Don't tread on me. You're getting the hero in the half shell tomorrow. Turtle is coming out firing. I want my 4 hours of programming. All right, don't cut me short by 6 minutes. And I can hear Mike Conti in his car driving home right now. Dude, you're wasting more time talking about it. Get to whatever you're going to talk about. I know. Sorry, Mike. I'm just a little frustrated, you know? It's my time. This is my time. All right. Falcons joint practices went on today. And I am very pleased. I am very pleased with what I saw, particularly with one thing. What's that thing, Turtle? Well, I'm glad you asked. The 9-5 connection. Oren, we're going to have to get a drop every time I talk about Penix in London, just of Dolly Parton going, "Working 9-5. We got to just get that thing going for this season, because they are ripping it up, not only in practices, but today in the scrimmages, they were on fire. And Drake London even went so far as to moss one of the Titans cornerbacks in embarrassing fashion. He took the ball right over his head and then completed the catch. It was awesome to watch. Defense continues to fly around. James Pierce Jr. continues to talk his ish, according to the Titans, and you love to see it. It was overall a very, very productive day in Atlanta. So that led me to think, okay, we got this 9-5 connection. We got Ray Ray's looking good. Bijan's looking good. The only hitch in the giddy up is if Darnell Mooney is going to be ready to go. And Raheem Morris again today was rather coy about the status of our WR2. But the depth there has shown with guys like David Sills and Casey Washington. They're not household names by any stretch, but they're guys that have been productive, and as long as Penix can get them the ball, they look like guys who can come down with it. So I'm not incredibly worried about Mooney, but it is a little, at this point, because it's been a couple of weeks and there's been no concrete update to speak of. But even with that said, got a question for y'all at 404-726-0929. After I looked at the numbers, came up with a question. How good can this Falcons offense be in 2025? You want to know how good I think it could be? Top five. Top five offense in the NFL. Right up there with the Bengals. And right up there with the Chiefs. Ravens. Niners. Rams. Whatever teams you want to say. The Bucks. Right up there. And here's why. In 2024, I did not know this. Did you know? The Falcons' offense was top five in total yards and passing yards per game. Huh. Well, I guess that makes sense. You know, Kirk had a bunch of big games. Penix had a big game at the end there. But they were top. Despite Kirk Cousins literally falling apart in the middle of the season, the Falcons' offense was top five in total yards and passing yards per game. Pretty good. Now, you would figure 17 weeks of Penix, that's only going to go up, right? You hope. But here's the kicker. They were only top 15 in both total points and points per game. So one thing doesn't make sense here. Why are they top five in total yards and passing yards, but they're only top 15 in points and points per game? Well, I found the missing link. And mentioning Mike Conte, this is something that he and I were discussing in the bullpen before my show started. We were talking about the Falcons and their offense. Did you know the Atlanta Falcons in 2024 were just 20th in red zone scoring? That's not good. That's nowhere near good enough, and that's not good in general. So you put all that pie together, and that's exactly why the offense, despite being top five in total yards and passing yards per game, was so meh, was so mediocre for the majority of the year. Once you got past 6-3 and 4-0 in the NFC South, it was essentially all downhill from there until Penix took over. And he only really had one big game out of the three, so it couldn't save your averages there. So, my question to you, Falcons fans, 404-726-0929, given that information, given the personnel for this year, and given your overall optimism about the state of the team, can this offense be a top five total offense in 2025? I think they absolutely can be. A couple of things need to go right. The offensive line needs to play well. Neusel needs to hold up his end as the new starting center. We need to see McGarry consistently pass block for consecutive games in a row with Penix under center. And we need to see the complement of weapons do their part. Kyle Pitts could be that magic pill to solve those end zone woes. Put that big body in there. A couple of slant routes, a couple of go balls. Just say, go get it, big fella. Again, they were 20th in red zone scoring in 2024. Nowhere near good enough. So 404-726-0929. Can the Atlanta Falcons offense be a top five offense in 2025? Or are you in wait to see mode? Because I get it. Listen, red zone woes, ineffectiveness, inconsistency, those things have plagued the Falcons, particularly on offense, for the last few years, since Matt Ryan was in his prime. It just hasn't been the same. So I get it if you're hesitant and you want to see it first. Penix only had three games under his belt. That's not a ton. But at the end of the day, year two, weapons, London looks unstoppable. Bijan looks unstoppable. If the offensive line holds up, if Pitts can give us something, I think they could be a top five offense in the league. What do you think? 404-726-0929. We'll take your calls when you get back. When we get back, I should say. You'll be back and I'll be back, so we'll be back. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. We're just getting started talking Falcons offensive potential with you at 404-726-0929. Back with you in five, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Good job, Bo. We're working 9 to 5, baby. Come on, Falcons fans. Oren, is it because it's getting a little gloomy and doomy outside that Falcons fans are now in a bad mood? I put the poll up at CT Tonight 929. Please give the account a follow if you haven't already. That's where all show-related content gets posted, at CT Tonight 929. Go vote on the poll. It's the simple question. Will the Falcons have a top-five offense in 2025? Initial batch of votes, 65-35. Oh, say no. Come on, man. Drake London looked great today. The 9-to-5 connection working stellar. We got, but that's right. We got 9-to-5, baby. That's it. You better get used to hearing that. You're going to be hearing that a lot. Yeah. Dolly better not come after me. She's litigious, I've heard. I've heard she's litigious. You better not try to scoop Dolly now.
I'd say the recording for that one is not being put into the system. So,
yeah, that's surprising, man. 65-35 initial batch of votes at CT Tonight 929 say no, the Falcons will not have a top five offense in 2025. I wonder why people think that. Like, is it the offensive line? Is it Pitts? Is it I don't know what else is the, is it Mooney's injury? I don't know what the issue is. Let's see what the people are thinking. 404-726-0929. The question tonight, I gave you the numbers from last year. They were top five in passing and passing yards per game, but they were only top 15 in the total points per game and total points period. And then they were only top 20 in red zone efficiency, which is not good. You need to be a lot better when you're scoring in the red zone. 20 to 20, they're great. From the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line, they're great. 20 and in, not so great. 404-726-0929. What do you guys think? Joey's up first. Joey, what do you think?
Yeah, hey, man. I think I'm in that 65% percentile there. I think they have all the tools to be in that top 5 percentile. You think of everyone that's back, obviously, with, you know, Bijan being a year in advance. And it's the offensive line. If you think, I was thinking about it this morning when I was listening to the morning shift, you know, it's important to have a core, and they have that there. I know there might be some questions, but for the most part, you have a lot of people returning, obviously, and it's a unit. And I think the big question is it's got to be on Michael Penix. If he can be consistent and, you know, do what he needs to do, then of course they can be in the top five. With all that being said, so I think that as long as Penix, you know, can do what he needs to do and stay healthy and be consistent, there is no reason why they cannot be a top five offense.
Yeah, Joey, appreciate the stuff, man. Thanks for checking in. I mean, I guess, right? I mean, Joey, totally understand your points. I just have more faith, I guess, is what it ultimately comes down to. I just have a little bit more blind faith. Excuse me. Guys, Drake London is performing this preseason at an all-world level for wide receiver. Yes, he's working 9 to 5. And that connection is going to be one of the most prolific in the NFL this season. Bijan Robinson, for what it's worth, is overwhelmingly being regarded as the top fantasy player to take in this year's draft. What does that tell you about the type of numbers that the fantasy world thinks that he's going to put up in this offense? If Mooney's healthy, could he be on pace for his second consecutive 1,000-yard season? Or whatever it was, he was right there. I think he will. Ray-Ray McCloud, he's really dazzled in camp as well and stepped up a lot in Mooney's absence. And then you got the Young Bucks who are looking to prove themselves. Sills, Washington, all those guys. 404-726-0929. I totally get Joey's points. I guess I'm just a little bit more inherently optimistic, but we shall see. Xavier's up next. Xavier, can the Falcons have a top five offense in 2025?
Hey, what's going on, Turtle? I believe they could be a top 10, French top 10, top five. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think when you talk about top five offenses, you talk about very explosive offenses. And our offense is more methodical, and a lot of that has to do with whether it be the play caller, but a lot of it has to do with who we have as well. As great as Bijan is with, like, Gink and all that good stuff, Bijan has yet to show consistently that he can break, like, a 40-yard touchdown here and there, you know what I mean? I think, because I thought about this for a while, so I wanted to go look it up. I think as far as, like, 20-plus-yard plays, Bijan had, like, a grand total of 5 last year. To put that into perspective, Tyler Allgeier had 4, and Bo Nix had 6. Drake London is more of a 50-50 ball catcher, right? He could go up and make the plays, but he's not necessarily going to take a slant route for 40 yards to a touchdown. So that's one of the reasons why I feel like you have a lot of stats in the middle of the field where you have a lot of space, but once you get to that end zone, it's a little bit harder, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Xavier, great call. Good points, man. Appreciate the phone call. It's all right to want to see it work first. That's okay. And to say that they're still going to be top 10, that's still good. But I think they could be even better than that. I really do. I think that this could be a top 5 offense in the NFL. 404-726-0929. But I totally get it if you have your hesitations. Let's go to Yo. Yo, you're up next. What do you think?
Top 5 is like, that's like the baseline, bro. Let me tell you something about what the offense looks like right now And it has to do with Zach Robinson wanting to only exclusively run outside zone. See, the thing about the Shanahan offense, and I'm not talking about Kyle, I'm talking about his daddy, Mike. Mike Shanahan ran an offense called the inside zone, or just the zone offense. What it allows you to do is to run a dive play where your five offensive linemen are just climbing to the next level, if they're not covered, onto the next defender. That allowed for a lot of running backs to average 1,000 yards per year, and it didn't just have to be an exclusively dynamic running back. When they had an exclusive dynamic running back, they won Super Bowls with it. But during the other years, they were still having 1,000-yard output from their running backs. What I'm going to say to the Atlanta Falcons organization right now is this. Look, outside zone is cool, but inside zone is faster. The easiest point to get from point A to point B is the exact straight line. So if you don't start running dive plays where your offensive linemen are just climbing up to the next level and getting the guys open, you're never going to get those explosive plays because you're taking too much time running to the sidelines as opposed to running downfield. So I believe that they should be the number one offense in the NFL. I know what Michael Penix can do. I know what Bijan Robinson can do. And I really know what Tyler Algier can do. But if you're going to keep making them run right to left instead of straight downhill, you're going to always keep running into this problem of not being able to score when it's in the five-yard line. Love you, Turtle.
All right, yo. That's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, honestly. More HB, like the Madden 101, Oren, you know what I'm talking about? Like literally just like halfback dive in Madden. It's like play 1A1 on the script. Run the ball through the A-gap with the running back. Yo wants more throwback football. And, hey, if it produces results, I'm all about it. But you just have to expect, I guess is the right word, that Zach Robinson has taken all of this into account, right? Yo, like, he's looking at the film. He's timing all of these things. He's seeing what he believes works best for the Falcons offense. That's what I'm going to choose to believe. And if he feels like the way that their running scheme is built right now is the most efficient, then that's what they're going to do. Logan's up next. Logan, what do you think?
I think we got the talent to be a top five. I think it just comes down to the game plan and execution on Sundays.
Yeah, Logan, I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that's, and appreciate the phone call, I think that's a lot of people's trepidation in being declarative about it, is saying that, yes, the tools are all there, but are they going to come together on Sundays?
That's going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah.
is on Sundays, and that's, I mean, like you said earlier, where we're struggling in the red zone. If we could even convert on 50% of those red zone attempts, I mean, we have everything we need at that point.
Yeah, it's great stuff, Logan. I appreciate the phone call. 404-726-0929. He's right about the red zone. I gave you the stat. They were 20th in the league in red zone efficiency. That is nowhere near good enough, especially for a team that was top five in yards per game and passing yards per game. I just don't understand how you can also be 20th in red zone efficiency and 15th in total points per game. I just, the math ain't mathing. It just, how can you be so good at getting the ball down the field and getting the ball down the field consistently to be top five in the NFL at doing that, and then you can't freaking punch it in? So your scoring average is average, literally 15th, and your red zone average is 20th, well below average. That's got to get better this season. 404-726-0929. Let's finish up with Josh. Josh, you're in the game. What do you think?
Oh, hey. This is dirt. My bad.
Oh, that's okay. What you got, buddy? Go ahead. Yep. Oren, we got to cut him loose. Got a bad phone line. That's okay. Okay, we'll go back to Josh to finish it out. Josh, go ahead.
Hey, sorry, I got cut off there. No, really good calls, you know, especially when we get in the red zone. You mentioned, you know, Madden football. I don't know if you – I'm 49, but when the Nintendo came out, there was a game called 10-Yard Fight, and it was like, you know, the centipede little characters running through. When you get down there in that 3 to 4 or 5 yard range, you got to punch it in. But I think that there might be a little bit of overanalysis on this because – really, if you think about Matt Ryan, when his last year, Kyle Pitts was pretty much an all-star, right? And then you run into the Desmond Ridder and the Marcus Mariota situation, right? Cousins comes in. We're 6-3. We're rocking and rolling. And then the injury happens. This all boils down. We've got the talent. Algier is the best second-string running back in the NFL. That guy's a bowling ball. Bashad Robinson, we've got the talent to do it. Great offensive line. This is going to, in my opinion, come down to quarterback play. And I believe that Penix is the real deal. But if he can put up numbers and a rookie year to be top five in the NFL might be a little aggressive. But if he can play the part, continue to grow, I think this Falcons offense has a tremendous amount of potential. But look back at the last six, seven years, all about quarterback play for us. We've got the talent to do the rest, man. Thanks for letting me talk to you.
Yeah, Josh, appreciate the phone call. Great stuff. 404-726-0929. Josh is right. Quarterback play has been, I think he used the word inconsistent. I would say that's very generous. I would say it's been horrid outside of a hot start from Kirk Cousins last year, which faded into the dark abyss by the time he got benched. Maybe Kyle Pitts gets back unlocked this year. I hope so. And if he can do that, that would go a long way in getting that red zone number up from 20th in the NFL. All right, we'll switch gears for a moment. We'll take more of your calls in the 7 o'clock hour. Caleb Johnson joins next for his weekly visit. Dogs number 5 in the poll this week. It's a little low for me. We'll see what Caleb thinks. Plus, is Trey Young really that upset? This saga just keeps... The plot thickens on Trey Young and his anger or not anger at the Hawks organization for not paying him yet. We'll talk about all that more next. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you till 10. Is he mad? Is he not? What's going on with Trey Young, man? The cryptic social media posts are coming back out. Ugh. Let's head out to the Wayne4.com hotline. Caleb Johnson, our Hawks insider. We'll talk some dogs as well. Every time I talk to you, this thing keeps getting more and more messy. Our guy Jake Fisher, who appears to have a beat on this thing, reported yesterday that there's no talks going on right now between Trey Young and the Hawks, and that's really not going to change, and at least over the summer. And Trey Young is posting videos of himself jamming out to new music and commenting underneath other people's posts. What is the latest in as the Trey Young contract world turns here?
Yeah, Chris, I feel like you're wanting some drama here. I don't know that there's a whole ton of it, but what I will say is based on Jake Fisher's reports, it kind of solidified similar things that I had heard, but he had more details, which is essentially that the Ansi Salehi and the Hawks were not interested in giving Trae Young a max contract. And rightfully so, Trae Young is looking for a max contract, especially after you saw De'Aaron Fox be given a max deal by the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I and a lot of other people are looking at what the Spurs just did and think that contract's going to look really ugly in a couple of years. And I feel like there's going to be conversations later on down the road if Victor Wembanyama is able to stay healthy and the Spurs get competitive of a thing that's going to hold him back is De'Aaron Fox's contract, because it's going to keep them close to that, you know, getting between the first and second apron and all those sorts of things. And the thing that is really good about Ansi Salehi running the show in Atlanta is he comes from managing the cap in Atlanta, and previous to that, in Golden State, previous to that in San Antonio. So like his probably the first thing on his brain is trying to see how this is all going to work out within the luxury tax and the salary cap. And what wouldn't work if they're going to continue to build this thing out is to give Trae Young a max deal. We've seen where, and even Trae himself has been on the record in the past and said, I don't have to be the top guy. Now, is Trey still a star? Yes. And is he someone that you want on your team? I think if you're the Hawks, yes, because I think you've built a lot of your team around him being kind of the centralized piece that keeps the offense going. But you obviously want to add to that as well. And so he's in that awkward area where a lot of the times teams would just give him the max contract, but it seems like the Hawks aren't willing to do that. And so there's not a whole lot to negotiate, quite honestly. If Trey's agent is going, hey, we want the max, and if Ansi and the Hawks are going, we're not giving them the max, then it's like, okay, well, let's let this thing play out. I think the positives that we have, and the reason why I wouldn't be concerned of any sort of trade going down or anything like that, is that Trey and Quinn are on the same page, and I think they both see the benefit of working with one another. And because of that, I think Trey does still does and has always wanted to be in Atlanta, and they can work on something when he does become a free agent, because when that happens next year, they will own his bird rights. So they will be able to give him the most amount of money. The only thing that would change this is if we end up in a season where Jalen gets hurt and Kristaps gets hurt and they're not competitive again, then maybe Trey goes, hey, I'll look at my options elsewhere. And maybe the Hawks go, yeah, it's a little bit better for us to reset. But that's a long, long, long way away and a long-winded way of saying that I'm not super concerned that an extension didn't end up happening.
So to the best of your knowledge, it doesn't at least appear that Trey feels like the Hawks are acting in bad faith.
I don't think so. I think like he's still going to be an athlete. He's still going to be a confident guy who is going to throw some shots out there because he wants to be paid a max deal and he thinks he deserves it. And I understand from his perspective why he thinks he deserves a max contract, especially, like I said, when you see other guys in the league that you feel you're and quite literally are better than a guy like a De'Aaron Fox. I understand why he would be frustrated that they're not going out of their way to keep him around long term. And that's why he's going to jump in the Micah Parsons thing and kind of stir that up. But I don't think he thinks, at least from my understanding, he doesn't think they're going about this in bad faith. He's just frustrated that they don't lock him down long term with the most amount of money.
Okay, so flipping over to the UGA side of things now. It is list season, so we take it with a grain of salt, but ESPN put out their preseason all-conference teams. SEC featured one dog, and that was punter Brett Thorson. So no real playmakers make the list for the all-SEC first team preview by ESPN. Does that surprise you?
I guess no, because I think what Georgia offensively is dealing with right now is what a lot of teams are dealing with, just maybe specifically in other areas, which is their biggest pieces on offense I would expect to have either not played very much or have transferred in from another school. See, I mean, you know, when you think a guy like Nate Frazier, like he was a freshman last year. He showed flashes, but he had to wait his turn and you know, kind of take the opportunities that he was presented. And it was funny, like he wasn't even trusted to run the type of way that he likes to run until later on in the season. Kirby Smart came out and was like, yeah, like he wants to bounce things outside and I want him to go north and south. And so, you know, he kind of chastised Nate at one point, and then Nate was given the opportunity in a practice to bounce it outside and he was able to use his speed to get past the defenders. And Kirby was like, okay, like you got it now, you know? So it's one of those, I think, Zachariah Branch, you know, the wide receiver who transferred from USC. I think there are pieces of this offense, and that's before you even get to the quarterback, that are unproven because they either weren't with this team last year, they were playing for somebody else, or they didn't get a whole lot of opportunity. And so I wouldn't think Gunnar Stockton would, you know, kind of make that list. And then you are going to like Oscar Delp. But even he was a bit inconsistent at times last year, and I think has a bit more to prove. And so while I find Kirby Smart's team still really talented, and I think they're better than Clemson, and seeing the AP poll come out and Clemson being ahead of Georgia is strictly based on, I think, people voting with well, we're familiar with Cade Klubnik and we know what he showed flashes of last year in a longer, you know, kind of a span. And so this is the season for, in these first couple of games, beginning with Marshall, where Georgia is going to have to prove to a lot of people of, yeah, we may not have played and been a big part of this team last year, but we can play and we're still pretty good.
Do you think Texas gets the love at number one mostly because of Arch Manning, or is it a combination of the guys that they're returning to? Because obviously when you think storylines, you think Arch Manning.
Yeah. I mean, Arch is part of that. But you can't just completely ignore that element of it all. But Steve Sarkisian put together a really, really good football team last year that obviously, you know, was right there in the mix of trying to compete for a national championship. I think, you know, if things had gone just a little bit different, quite honestly, in the SEC championship game, they're winning that one and maybe have a, you know, they would have had a completely different route in order to pull off a championship, and maybe they find themselves in the game itself. So I think based on recruiting, based on the results on the field last season, and then, yes, the hype around Arch Manning is so real. I have been one who I'm like, why do y'all believe that Arch is any better than Gunnar Stockton? Like, I feel like we saw them in about similar scenarios, especially at the end of last season, and they both came up short, and it kind of felt like the moment was a bit too big when both Gunnar and Arch got their opportunities. And so with that, it's like, yeah, just because the last name is there, just because the skill set is promising, doesn't mean that's going to turn into any results. Like, this is all projection. And if you're telling me that you're holding back guys at Georgia because they're unproven, you then can't use your same arguments to convince me that Arch Manning has shown us enough to be amongst that, oh, he's an early Heisman favorite and all that sort of a thing. And so I mean, I do think Texas deserves to be where they're at. It's wild to me that they, being the number one team on what the AP poll, and then being not favorited in their first game because they're taking on Ohio State. I think that I saw a stat the other day. It's the first time since 1978 that that's the case, where they're the number one team in the country, but they're not favorited in their first game. So they've got their opportunity to prove it right out of the gate. I think Georgia has to wait until they face Tennessee to really convince people, because otherwise, like, these first couple of weeks is just going to be a, you know, well, Georgia could throw anybody out there. Texas gets that opportunity right out of the gate to show that they are worth, you know, kind of being placed on the pedestal in the way that they are.
Tennessee, Ole Miss, or Florida, which one of those three teams scares you the most that Georgia has to play?
Honestly, it's Florida, because I think DJ Lagway, the way that he kind of progressed last season, and I know there were so many jokes about that Florida Gator team, but I think quarterback play obviously impacts so much of what you're able to do, you know, as a team, obviously offensively. And I think what Lagway brings that Florida Gator offense, I think a lot of people are going to sleep on them. Like, I don't think Georgia is going to sleep on Tennessee because they've been there time and time again. And even though, you know, even though Nico's not there anymore, they're still going to be somewhat of a competitive team. Ole Miss caught you sleeping last year. Like, this has been kind of a reoccurring thing, it's felt like, with Ole Miss. And so I think the awareness is more there for those two games. It's Florida, who has been more of a cupcake type atmosphere, Now, this is going to be the last year, you know, that they play in Jacksonville before they go take a couple of seasons away as Jacksonville Stadium gets renovated. And so I feel like Florida for sure is that team that wants to upset a lot of people, wants to surprise a lot of people. And I hope Georgia's ready for it.
Caleb, appreciate the time as always. Looking forward to continuing to talk some dogs. We are just a mere—I think we can count it by days now, Caleb, which just makes us all salivate at that thought. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good, man.
All right, that is Caleb Johnson there. When we get back, the Braves are about to play baseball again. They just won 4 out of 5 games against the Marlins. Chris Sale's making a rehab start tonight. So what do we make of this thing? Harris is hot. Baldwin's hot. Are we feeling any better about the season? Oren has 5 true and false questions for me next. Braves Style, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.